Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another very fun episode. I promised you, the listeners, to bring you a wide variety of cats-related content, and today I continue down that path as we welcome a Broadway performer who has a very unique connection to cats. You may have seen her on Broadway in Hair or Sideshow, or even on your TV in an episode of Law & Order SVU, but her unique connection to cats is why she is here today. So welcome, Lauren Elder, to The Wrong Cat Died, and thank you for joining me.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So I want to actually kick us off now, because I know we'll get to your unique connection, but you said that you saw the show first as a seven-year-old.
Yeah.
And I have spent a lot of time arguing that children should not see this show.
Oh.
So what was your experience as a seven-year-old, and how did it change your life?
Well, my parents knew that I loved singing and dancing and, you know, watching musicals on TV, like, you know, The Wizard of Oz. And they also knew that I loved cats, the animal. And when the national tour of Cats was coming through Los Angeles, they bought tickets and the seats were in the second row on the aisle. And they let me have the aisle seat. And so the show started. It was the very first musical I ever saw live. And the show started, the lights went down, and all of a sudden, you know, the green cat eyes come out and they're moving through the audience. And
scared the life out of me as an adult.
You know, I'm sure I probably was a little bit scared at first, but then they started coming up to me and like rubbing up against me like real cats. And then I felt very at ease and very into it. Like I was ready to just jump up and join the show at that moment. I remember when the Rum Tum Tugger came down into the audience, in my heart, I was just like, please, please, please pick me out of the audience. I want to dance with you. I think he had already pulled a woman out and was like twirling her in the aisle. And I thought maybe I'll be next, but I wasn't. He ran back on the stage. It wouldn't have been appropriate for Rum Tum Tugger to pull a seven-year-old out of the audience. But it was incredible just seeing these dancing and singing cats doing their thing, living their lives on stage like that, coming into the audience and involving us as well. It completely changed my life. And then realizing that that was actually a career path made me, you know, never look back again. I already knew I wanted to be a singer, performer of some sort, but this, I think, is what really made me realize that it had to be in the theater.
So as a seven-year-old, how much of the storyline did you truly understand?
I mean, I guess first I'll ask, what storyline are you talking about? Because there's not much of one there anyway.
It's a loose arc.
I mean, basically, all of it that you can. I understood that these were these cats that gathered together for some sort of an event. They all introduced themselves and told us about themselves, and one got chosen to move on. And I've always interpreted it as being, you know, reincarnated, brought into their next life, because cats have nine lives. So going to the Heaviside Layer, in my mind, was always that cat got to then live again. Now, I've had a lot of arguments with people over this in my life, because some people think that just means the cat died. And then I wonder, well, then why are they all fighting for this chance? Especially like the younger, hipper ones like Rum Tum Tugger or Mr. Mistopheles, who are like at the peak of their career. Why would they want to then die? I mean, I get why Grisabella would want to die, because like her life changed and everyone hates her now. I don't really understand that either. But I've always interpreted it as they are being reborn. And that's what I got when I was a child, and that's what I've carried with me to this day.
Yeah, so I don't disagree with you. I think that they are being reborn.
Thank you.
I do think that there's a lot of aggressive sexual context into this show that I noticed as an adult that I was like, why are there children sitting around me watching this and like mesmerized? And it's like, maybe it went over their head, but there's just definitely a lot to it. And then when you really dig into the loose plot line, you get into some sex work, into some drugs, into some gentlemen's clubs, into potential domestic abuse. It gets a lot.
Wow. And so,
yeah. And so I think like clearly that doesn't come off to the 7-year-old eyes, and that's why there are children there, because they just think it's cats. But the more I've researched the show, the more I'm mad at my mom for bringing my sister as a kid.
Oh, wow. Well, I guess I'm going to have to learn more about these things that you've learned, because I haven't even dug that far into it. I think I let my 7-year-old interpretation of it move on with me throughout life. And I always felt that, because I've met so many people in my adult life that hate Cats and think it's the worst musical and should never have been made. And I would always say to them, well, if you had seen it when you were 7, I think you would feel differently.
Interesting. So different than I'm the reverse. I'm sitting there going like, you need to see it as an adult so you can really like
appreciate all of it.
Appreciate what's happening. And you probably need some type of enhancement, whether it's drugs or alcohol, to really appreciate it. But the reason I really wanted to talk to you is because you left that show and you told me that you created a one-woman version in your garage of Cats the Musical, where you were every character. So this is what I want to hear. Tell me all about this one-woman show of Cats.
It was common for me to put on shows in my garage, sometimes with my sister, sometimes with the neighbor kids, and sometimes all by myself if I couldn't find anyone else. And
no neighbor kid wanted to be Tugger or Mr.
Eventually, eventually some of the other kids got on board, and then it was always like this weird fight over who would be the white cat. Everybody wanted to be the pretty white fluffy cat. I don't even know her name.
Victoria,
thank you. I guess I should know that. How horrible. What a Cats fan. But you know, for some reason we thought she was the prettiest and the most special. You know, we would fight over that. But before that happened, I had to do it by myself. And at this point in my life, I had never had singing voice lessons or dance classes or anything like that. So it was all just what I thought it was. I would put on my cassette tape. It was a double cassette tape. So I would have to stop 3 times to flip tapes and change tapes.
Yeah. So 2 intermissions. Yeah, a couple intermissions.
As you know, maybe you need. Yeah, actually there were 3, cuz side 3 A,
intermissions.
Flip, side B, change the tape, flip again, all of that. And you know, I'm not sure if I even wore costumes. I'm trying to remember all of this. But basically, it was like I forced my parents to sit in the garage and watch me just dance around to the Cats cast recording. I wish that I had taken it on further. Well, honestly, I did do this in a friend's living room a few years ago. I redid the entire performance. And, you know, maybe I'll bring it to the masses at some point. I have been working on a one-woman version of Rent, which is very different from Cats. Maybe once I've figured that one out, we'll move on to my one-woman Cats again.
So did you differentiate between the cats, or did you just dance your way through the whole?
No. Every cat is different and unique and special with their own energy, their own personality, and their own music style. You know, every song is almost a different style of music. And so you have to have different interpretations, different energies, different dances. I should have had different costumes, but you know, it was just me.
There's still time. There's still time. Okay, so I want to give you a character, and I want to hear the 7-year-old interpretation of like how you played that character during your performance.
All right.
Okay, let's start with Old Deuteronomy.
Oh, Deuteronomy lived a long time.
I mean, he doesn't sing that song himself, but I'm you know, just interpreting it as him. He was very low and very slow and very thoughtful.
This is going to be great. I want to keep going.
Thank you.
Jenny Anydots.
Oh, Jenny Anydots. I mean, she's very up and bubbly, I think, you know, dancing around a lot like this, and maybe with like this kind of a voice. I don't really remember how much I did with Jenny Anydots. I mean, just, you know, that giant dress that she had with all the kittens. I just wished that had been in my possession at that time.
Did you tap dance?
Oh, absolutely. For a number?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. Oh, God, I thought I was such a great tap dancer back then. Before I had taken any tap dance. I remember, like, tapping for my friends at school and being like, look what I can do. Just moving my feet. They didn't know what I was doing.
Okay, Rum Tum Tugger.
He's like, well, first of all, the Rum Tum Tugger was my favorite character when I was a child. And I really think that the reason was he reminded me of David Bowie in Labyrinth. Yeah. I don't know who inspired who there, but basically they are the same for anyone that knows both characters. I feel that Jareth in Labyrinth. I think that's his name in Labyrinth is Jareth, the king of the goblins. And Rum Tum Tugger, they've got the hair, they've got that rock and roll vibe and the tights that so tightly held these parts that I didn't know about at that time in my life, but I knew were doing something to me. So it was like this pure sex that I didn't know was sex at seven. So he was he had the swagger and like that voice, you know, cause he's the Rum Tum Tugger. So he definitely, I mean, I would sing all the songs as the characters, even though other cats normally sing about them, right? You know,
yeah.
He was like, the Rum Tum Tugger is a curious cat. And there isn't any need for you to shout it.
I wish your parents filmed this at seven.
Oh my God. If they had, it would be lost. We lost all of our home videos from like when I was, gosh, probably age 5 to like age 10. They all got lost in a move that we made. And I cannot tell you. I mean, it probably was filmed and maybe someone found it. So all of you out there listening, if you found a beta tape with my home videos of my version of Cats on it, please call me and we'll get it converted somehow.
Yeah, I think I hope it still exists out in the world.
It was on beta.
Okay, Buster Jones.
Oh, Buster Jones. He talks like this and he's very fat, as we know. Kind of like that. And I think he kind of waddled a bit.
He had a spoon that, like, it was like his cane.
Oh my God, really? I don't think I ever even noticed his cane was a spoon.
Yeah, in the 1998 movie.
I was thinking about his spats all the time. That it was just it was all about those spats.
Okay, you already talked a little bit about Victoria.
Oh my God. Well, you know, she was a beautiful ballerina. And I felt the most amazing when I was playing Victoria. But you know who I will say, and I didn't realize this because, you know, as a little girl, you want to be the princess, you want to be the pretty one. But I know for a fact the cat that I loved the most and wanted to be the most and still long to play, though I won't because I'm not a dancer. I take that back. I am a dancer. I am a great dancer. I have an incredible dancer inside of me, but she doesn't quite dance the way that they would want you to in Cats on Broadway. But my favorite cat is the one that sings about Grisabella. She is my favorite one.
So that is...
And I don't know her name.
I believe it's Demeter?
That sounds right. In the revival, they turned it into two... Oh, no, wait a minute. There were two cats. In the revival, they made Grisabella sing that song about herself, which I just didn't think made any sense at all.
there's a couple choices of who it could have been. There was three sisters. Every production does it differently, and that's the other part that's made it very difficult.
See, that's frustrating.
Because I've only seen the revival, the 2016 revival, and the 1998 movie, and no other versions of this whatsoever.
Well, I think the 98 movie has the version that I'm speaking about, which, yes, there are two cats that sing about Grisabella. They do the remark, the cat who hesitates toward you.
So it could be Jemima. It could be... Who else? Let me think. I'm just thinking out loud. It could be
but in that revival,
could be Elektra. Could be Elektra.
It very well could.
I'm running out of cat names that I remember that aren't the main characters, because I still don't know that much.
Keep track of them. Have loved this show my entire life, and I don't know their names.
Yeah.
You know, but I remember my whole life, that has been my favorite song in the show. It has been my favorite thing to sing in the show. It's just, I don't know. I love it. And I was very confused by the choice they made in the most recent revival of having Grisabella sing that about herself.
Yes.
That made me sad.
I do want two more impressions, because there's two more like really main characters I think you got to cover.
Okay.
Mr. Mistopheles.
I wish you could all see me right now, because it's also so movement based, you know? I mean, he's just... Maybe my second favorite cat is Mr. Mistopheles, because he's just so magical and he's so exciting. And I always felt really, really positive.
And then the last one, now we're going to change paces, which is Grisabella.
Oh, Grisabella. Oh, God, Grisabella. She's just so torn down. She's so sad and she's so tired.
And did you belt out memory?
No, you know, that's actually like never been my thing, is belting memory. Isn't that weird? Like, I'm not that into that song. Again, I want to do the, you see the corner of her eye twist. That's my part. Not memory.
I personally love McCavity's song now.
McCavity is a great song. That is a great song. Well, you know what other song I like? Is Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer.
Yes.
That is one of my very favorites.
So when I saw the play the very first time, the only song I remembered, besides memory, because that was the only song I knew going in, was Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer. I couldn't get it out of my head. It just stuck with me for like a week.
It's so good. It's so good. You might say notorious.
That was.
I mean, they are the best.
The
and
very
it's
first
such a good song. Yeah, and they ruined it in the movie.
They went back to the original, is what I was told. It is a really? British version. It's a different interpretation from a different production.
Wow, I don't like that one.
Yeah, I wasn't as big of a fan. I was really not a fan of how they did Mr. Mistopheles in the movie.
I agree.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And then I have lots of other gripes about it. But I guess, tell me, when did you see it? How did you see the movie? Like, what was your take? Yeah,
the new movie. I saw the movie. You know, I didn't get to see it right away. I was home for the holidays in California at my mom's house, where I am now again. But my mom didn't really have any desire to go see the movie, and I wanted to be able to see it with a group of friends that I knew were going to enjoy it in the same way as me, which I knew it was going to be a train wreck. I knew that it was going to be weird. I also knew that I was going to love it in my own way. And so I waited until I got back to New York, and I saw it, gosh, I think the first week of January. And I went with a bunch of friends, and, you know, we ate some special treats. And I took a bottle of wine with me in my bag. And because I knew that was the only way to do it. And And the moment the music started at the very beginning, it was just like magic was filling my body. I was so happy. I was so excited. It came and went from there on.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, when Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer happened, I was filled with rage. I could not, like, I blacked out for a moment during that part of the movie because I was so upset. My blood was boiling. I literally wanted to hurl my popcorn at the screen, but I didn't because I really wanted to eat my popcorn. Yeah. But that was very upsetting for me and took me out of the movie for a little bit.
What was it, a busy theater?
Oh, no, no. It
was your friends.
Gosh. So I went with, I think there were six of us that went together. And then there were probably six other people in the theater sprinkled throughout, like in couples. And everyone there was there to have a good time and have fun and yell things out and sing along, except for two ladies in the back. And they were not happy. They kept trying to shush people and yell at us for laughing, but there was no stopping us. And I mean, honestly, it was the whole theater against them.
It's
10 of us against them.
Yeah. Well, that was what I asked, because I saw it early as a press screening and it was filled because it was, you know, part of that thing. And it was, but everybody I talked to after who went to see it was like, yeah, it was me and like three other people. And it was like, you know, like there was just never even remotely close to a full theater.
See, I would have loved to have seen it in a full theater, as long as everyone was up for singing along and laughing at parts that were not necessarily meant to be laughed at.
So that was where it got very interesting, because it was pre-opening. And so I think there were some people that were there for much more serious reasons, whether covering it for, you know, for reviews or what that was. And then there was about 10% that was there for your reason. And I personally loved it when they started laughing, you know, and like they kind of really got into it, because it made it a much more interesting experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was an experience more than anything.
It was absolutely an experience. I mean, those cockroaches that Jenny Annie Dots was tap dancing with.
Yeah.
That was weird. The fur coat that Judi Dench cat was wearing.
At least got to see it when it was fully edited.
Apparently. I mean, they still had hands. So I don't know who made that choice to give them human hands. And the perspective was so off. It was just, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, Andrew Lloyd Webber has now come out and said that it was not his fault. He's basically stepped away from the movie.
Yeah, although I did see he disowned it.
Jason Derulo said that he thought recently that it was going to change the world.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a parody site when I saw the link.
No, I think he was serious. I think he had a lot of high hopes for this. And why wouldn't you? You are the Rum Tum Tugger. You've got to have that.
Attitude going forward,
or everything's going to fail.
Yeah. Now, how many times have you seen, besides 7-year-old, you seen the touring production? How many times have you seen the play besides that?
I've seen it 3 times live. I saw it that first time when I was 7. I saw it again when I was 10 or 11, I think.
So that'd be the original Broadway cast, like during that run, the original Broadway run?
Well, I didn't see it
or
on
Broadway. Was it touring again? Okay.
It was touring because at that point we were living in Pittsburgh.
Okay. So another
we
tour.
We moved a lot. Another tour. And then I saw it live on Broadway in the revival.
The 2016 revival.
Yeah, I won a lottery ticket and went and sat by myself and the cats came up to me again.
Were you on the aisle?
I wasn't, but there weren't many seats sold in the mezzanine where I was sitting. Okay. So and I was worried because I thought, oh, I'm all the way up here. I might not have the experience that I want.
No, they come up there. Don't worry.
They came all the way up. I got to touch their heads. It was just so great. I loved it.
And then you said you got to sing or dance with that revival cast?
Oh, my God. Yes, one of the most amazing moments of my life. I am one of the regular performers at Club Cumming, Ellen Cumming's nightclub in the East Village in New York. And the very first week that Club Cumming was open, I'm part of a Monday night show there called Mondays in the Club with Lance, led by Lance Horn, who's an amazing composer, music director. And he had invited the cast of Cats to come down to the very first Mondays in the Club show. And they did. They finished their show and they came straight down to the East Village. And it was, I will see if I can find a video of this to send to you, because I think I have a video of them doing the Jellicoe ball. And like, I'm in the middle of it, like holding a disco ball for some reason. It wasn't hanging. We were just holding it and passing it around. And they're all dancing around me. And I just remember just thinking, this is it. It's like my life is complete. I am in Cats now. It doesn't matter that I don't know the moves. I'm doing it with them. It was really magical.
Yeah, you were an ensemble character just living your own cat life.
Yes, I was.
I hope you can find the link. If you can find the video, we'll link it.
I will find it and send it.
To see that. That's amazing. Okay, so do you have any, besides, we'll get to my last question about Grisabella and her choice, but do you have any other plot opinions? Is there anything else that you, I mean, you clearly are a fan. You had your own interpretation of everything. We got to hear your interpretation of most of the cats, but is there anything that you now as an adult looking back being like, I would have written that differently?
Oh, that's a really good question.
I have lots. So that's why I asked.
I imagine that you do. I think I may have like expanded on some of the stories a little more. Really, my biggest question is like, what happened to Grisabella? Because apparently she was beloved by everyone and something changed along the way to make these cats hate her. They're so mean to her. They are so mean to her. And I just don't understand that part of the show, because I feel like so much of the show is them lifting each other up. Look at this cat. Look how amazing they are. And look at this cat. Everybody loves this cat. But then Grisabella comes along and they're like, oh, get away from her. She's the worst. And I just think that I think that's really sad, even though my favorite song is the song about her.
Yeah.
It's just, oh God, it's just got the best, you know, it's like those blue tones and those belty notes, but they're not too high and they're not too low. It's just the musicality of that song, not really what it's about.
You're the only person that's picked that song as their favorite that I've talked to.
That makes sense. I believe that.
So there are a couple interpretations of why they're mean to her.
Oh, I would love to hear that.
So one is that she was the star and fell off for drugs, sex work, whatever you want to take. She went down a very dark path and left the tribe or got banned from the tribe because of her decisions. There's also very loose rumors that she might be many of the cats' mother and also left the tribe. And so there could be some animosity because of an abandoned mother.
Wow.
It just depends on how deep you dig into the rumor mill and which lines you want to connect, because there are some things where, you know, it's like, well, she's either this mother or that could be the mother, that could be the mother. And there's no way that they all could be the mother. So it's like, if you pick and choose, there are a lot of ways to interpret this.
Well, and cats, when they have babies, they have a lot of babies at one time. So yep. I think that's very, and they can start making babies at like 6 months old. So like, you know, like it's totally possible. And that's maybe why she's so ragged and tired. And oh man, you know, you said tribe, and it reminded me of when I started working on the musical Hair. I didn't know that musical before I was cast in it. And I remember in the middle of rehearsal one day, we were staging Aquarius, and Diane Paulus said something about how, you know, it's almost like you're all being drawn to this place on this one night for this beautiful celebration, and then everyone will get to know all of you. And I remember out loud, I said, it's Cats! Because it so, is. Those so, two shows are insanely similar.
So, and somebody else said that it is Chorus Line. Cats is Chorus Line.
I mean, I get Elise, that. I get that. I think Elise
said that. Yeah, there are other ties. I don't know musicals well enough to tie any of them together. Because I don't know. I know Aquarius. I know the song. I know that one song. But I don't know much else about Hair.
Well, and then it's a very loose storyline. All of the characters come out and sing about who they are and why they're there. And then one ends up being chosen to go to his death.
It is exactly the same movie. Drafted
for the war, you know. It's a little bit different. They're protesting the war. But other than that, and in our revival version, we all went out into the audience and rubbed up against the audience members. So
I feel like I need to devote an episode to trying to talk to people to figure out what other musicals are just Cats without Cats.
I think
so. Now we're at Chorus Line and Hair.
Yeah.
If anybody else has opinions, I don't know. And not like I've just only seen a handful of shows, and mostly recently, cause I, you know, when I'm in New York, having been in New York near Broadway, been able to kind of go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to try to now I'm curious what else out there, which one came first? Who wrote what first?
I would believe that Hair came before Cats, because Hair was written in 1967.
Uh-oh. Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, however, a small caveat here, the T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats came out long before Hair was written. So, I don't know how you decide there.
That book doesn't tell the story. That book is just explaining each cat.
Each cat. You're fair.
So it's not, someone else tied it together and added a song that wasn't even in the book, because, and this is why this helps my argument of why children shouldn't see it, but T.S. Eliot thought that the Grisabella poem was too dark for the book for children to read. So that's why it's not in the book. Wow. But it's the center of the musical.
Oh, that makes sense then.
Yeah, I've made my case fairly well.
There are
some holes in some of my cases. I get it. I'm aware of my pitfalls and some of my arguments, but I've done some research. I have I've went dark into the cat's web and learned a lot of stuff I just never thought I would ever learn in my life. Okay, so a couple other just quick character questions about the play. So you already said your favorite song. You already said you would want to play. Who would you want to quarantine with? Which cat?
Mr. Mistopheles.
That's my answer too.
Mr. Mistopheles. He would keep you entertained the entire time. He can make anything happen.
And then my other one before we talk about who we think should die at the end is, there is a thing, I'll just explain it, because I can ask you, but I have a feeling you're going to say, I have no idea what you're talking about. Because I didn't, and feel like I know a lot about cats now. There is a thing called Cat's Tumblr, where different people around the globe basically interact with each other as if they were that character in situations. So they could be like riding the subway together, or they could be much other things that we're not going to talk about. But which character would you want to write for? If you were going to be like, I'm going to own a cat's Tumblr and I'm going to be that character in a scenario of going to buy groceries and I'm going to run into the other characters, which cat would you want to write for?
Oh gosh, this is such a good question. And I'm just like going, it might be, you know what? I think it would have to be Mungo Jerry or Rumpelteazer, one of them, because the options are endless there. They can get into any trouble. The trouble can just keep building and getting more and more fun. And then trying to figure out how they escape the trouble.
Yep. I love it. Yeah. So we're on the same page. I said I like McCavity because you'd be able to write you could write villain over and over and over again, which would be kind of fun. It'd be different. Okay. So we're totally aligned there. Okay. So let's see if we're on the same page here then. I have argued for multiple episodes that Grizabella should not have died at the end of the show. Who do you think should have died? And if it is Grizabella, why? Tell me why I'm wrong.
I think Grizabella is a solid choice, though I have always felt that it should have been Gus, the theater cat.
Yep. That's the biggest online support is for Team Gus.
Team Gus. And, you know, I don't know that I had really ever thought about this that much until the movie.
Interesting. So the movie is what kind of sparked this again? Okay.
Ian McKellen's performance, just he feels like, you know, your grandpa or your favorite great uncle. Doesn't everyone have a favorite great uncle? and he's so sweet and he has worked so hard and I think that I never realized, I guess why the movie made such an impact on me with this particular character is I never realized just how old and frail he is. When he's
Did you watch the 98 movie?
Yes, I have seen the 98 movie. It's been a while. And actually, I've been wanting to watch it again with my niece and nephew, because now that I'm in California again with my family for this pandemic, however long it lasts, I've been exposing my niece and nephew to great movies and musicals that I love. And I've been trying to get them to watch Cats. They're on the fence. I don't know who got to them first and told them they shouldn't watch Cats, but it seems like someone may have.
Yeah.
But I really do need to watch the 98 film again, because I remember feeling like that was a really, really decent representation of what happens on stage.
Yeah. It was shot on stage. There was a little bit of, there were some added effects that maybe you won't get. Like there's some lightning bolts and some stuff that I was just like, oh great, McCavity's, that's way more fun. But yeah, the movie, the Gus, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he was a, you know, superstar actor at the time, and he was blind and old and frail, and like they like walked him out just to sing the song basically, and so there was no dancing, no number. And so he and Ian McKinney, like that, it was that version for me. It was very representative versus depending on who you see in the show and how you see it. So yeah, it's the same thing. Like I do think there's a very, very strong Team Gus argument.
It was John Mills. I just had to look it up to know.
Sir John Mills. That is correct.
John Mills.
That was
and
it.
And I had no idea that that's what they were doing. That is really cool.
And he was blind or could barely see. So if you like watch that, they walk him out and like someone's holding on to him. And it's like, it's, you know, it's Cat. So they kind of like make it feel like it's just part of it. But there's no dancing, no nothing. He goes up there and just belts out his song and gets off stage.
That's amazing. I'm making the kids watch that tonight. They're going to have to just do, you're watching Cats tonight.
And you know, I guess the movie version in 98 is a little less aggressive because there's not as much, like, I don't know, the whole green eyes scared me for kids. And then just in general, I mean, I don't think you'll see Tugger's, his dance is a little sexual for any child.
Oh, I've always remembered that from my very first experience of Rum Tum Tugger. I didn't even like realize what sex was when I was 7, and yet I knew that was sex.
Yeah, you knew you were seeing something.
Yeah.
So what tell me, you have an album out, right?
I do. It doesn't have anything to do with cats, unfortunately.
No, I know, but that's
okay.
Maybe
the next one will. But yeah, it's an album of my original music. I write my own music and perform fairly regularly, even online these days. And it's just called Lauren Elder, and you can find it on Spotify and iTunes and Apple Music and like any of those places where you can find music online. It's there.
Amazing. And how can we find you on social media?
At Lauren _Elder on Instagram, or Lala Bird Lauren on Twitter, and just Lauren Elder on Facebook.
Amazing. And when we find whoever bought your beta tape at Goodwill somewhere across the country in a move that got sold, whenever we find that, if you have it, please let us know, because we would like to see the 7-year-old. It was 3 intermission Cats production from in LA. So yeah. In the garage in LA.
In the garage.
Every character you can imagine. We got a little taste of it today. But there is a full production somewhere. I hope it has like the lightning bolts too added in.
I mean, someone must have done that, right? They found it and they knew that they had to enhance that and then eventually get it back to the world. It's coming.
I don't think they're going to call us, because it's going to be, it's like, they know that's so valuable.
It's gold. It's gold.
I can't give it away.
No, just release it. Put it in the theaters. You have my permission.
Just put it online. Put it on the internet.
Oh, yeah, not the theaters. Nobody's going there yet.
Well, thank you so much for telling us about your cat story, giving us amazing interpretations of these characters, and being a guest today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. It was so much fun.
Thanks for listening to this bonus episode with Lauren Elder on The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.